very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, your number one stop for all things Spanish football on a Monday. Delighted to say that myself, Ollie Wilson, your host, as always, is joined once again by two of the finest minds that Marca has to offer as we run down all of the top stories from a big weekend in Spain's top flight, with Madrid getting a victory finally, Barcelona just getting past Sevilla, and Valencia continuing to plod along. And looking back at all of that is Mr. Ewan McTare and Mr. Jason Pettigrew. Ewan, pleasure to chat with you once again, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. We've had a few good weeks of La Liga action, and now we've got another one of these awkward international breaks to break it all up. But yeah, loads to talk about this week. This weekend, a good weekend for a lot of the big teams.
And Jason, welcome back to the show, first and foremost, before we dive into any of the talking points. And a landmark made once again for Lionel Messi with his 600th Barcelona appearance. And we're just ticking off boxes now of, okay, this number of goals, this number of appearances for all competitions, for this competition, for this club, for club and international. I mean, we could pull one out every other week. Is the 600 club important, really?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on, as always. It's always a pleasure to be chatting to you, Ollie. Figures like this, I mean, 600 games at Barcelona, you've got to tip your hat to him. I think only Iniesta and Xavi are ahead of him, both in La Liga appearances and appearances in total. Whether he can go on and usurp either of those two, we'll see. But I mean, the level he's played at in those 600 appearances, I mean, it certainly deserves acclaim from everybody, I think.
Yeah, he's not bad, I suppose, as a little footballer, Lionel Messi. Some thought perhaps he might be too short for the game. Those people are eating their words, I think would be the phrase to put it politely. But let's not start with Barcelona today, and we'll move on to them in just a moment. Let's talk about Real Madrid. Finally, a 3-0 victory on the weekend at home as well in the Bernabeu. Just a much-needed confidence boost, and a win that had to come as well after the loss to Tottenham in midweek. Las Palmas, unfortunately, the victims for Real Madrid. But Ewan, not the greatest game still from Los Blancos. They don't really mind how they win, just as long as they win at the moment, it seems.
Yeah, I think with this international break coming up, this wasn't ever really going to be a confidence booster, because any momentum they got from this one was going to immediately sort of be evaporated by everybody jetting off to South America, Russia, wherever they're off to. So the main thing here was to get 3 points, because with Barcelona having played the day before, you know, Real Madrid came into this game 11 points behind, obviously, with this game in hand. So they really needed to just get the 3 points on the board and go home into this international break and rethink. But yeah, like you mentioned, it wasn't the most convincing performance. I mean, the first 10 minutes they hardly got the ball off Las Palmas. Las Palmas were, remember, they drew both fixtures with Real Madrid last season, and that was under Kiki Setien, with his possession-based kind of style of football. That style of football that helped Real Betis, Setien's current team, to defeat Real Madrid there this season. So Las Palmas are not in the best of shapes right now, but they've still got that ability to pass the ball, to move it around, and that seems to stifle Real Madrid. I mean, when Real Madrid have the ball, they're one of the best in the world, but in terms of taking back possession and actually winning the ball back high up the pitch, Real Madrid have never really been a team that's excelled in that, and Las Palmas seemed to know that, so they were passing it around quite comfortably. But once Real Madrid got that first goal, that Casemiro goal, first headed goal of the season actually, then they were able to, you know, move on, and Las Palmas, their attacking problems, it never really looked like they were going to get a goal and get back in the game, unless it came from a set play or a penalty.
What's been the reaction in Spain in general to particularly to the 3-1 defeat against Tottenham in the Champions League? Because it's not a pretty scoreline. Madrid were outplayed for a lot of that game at Wembley, and of course, great for them to come back and get this 3-0 victory. But what was that reaction between the game on the weekend and what happened in midweek? And was that pressure building even more, or did some people just accept that this Tottenham side are a good side, and therefore a loss away from home in England at Wembley to this Tottenham team, not so bad for Real Madrid?
Yeah, I think if it had come after a win at the weekend, the reaction wouldn't have been quite so negative. But the fact that they also lost to Girona last weekend, and the fact that they were I think, deservedly beaten in both of those games, that's that really has led to not so much outrage, but more just concern that two games in a row, Real Madrid have been the worst team. I mean, it happens, you know. Real Madrid lose games. You know, football is a funny old game. You can be the best team, and someone can get a last minute deflection off a free kick or something like that, and you can lose a game. So, you know, Real Madrid fans, you know, they're some of the most demanding in the world, and they even struggle to accept those games where they were the better team and still lost. But they struggle even more to accept the ones, to accept two matches in a row where they were the deserved losers.
Interesting that Bale and Benzema, Ronaldo and Benzema, I was used to the BBC, excuse me. Ronaldo and Benzema not on the score sheet today. It's just not happening for Ronaldo in front of goal in La Liga. And they're having to find goals from elsewhere. Isco and Asensio's goal in particular, the second for Madrid on the weekend, really just knocked the stuffing out of Las Palmas, it seems. The problem with Ronaldo in La Liga, perhaps, I think more than anything else, it seems, and Jason, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well, is that it's not just that he's not scoring, but he's still trying to dominate the attacking threat going forward, and he's taking a lot of shots, and it's not just working for him. And it's becoming that Ronaldo's individual desire to be the top dog is just, you know, limiting chances for others to actually get in on the score sheet and help support and provide the goals for this side at times.
Yeah, I don't know if that's slightly unfair towards him though, Ollie. I mean, at the end of the day, attackers are sort of paid to score goals, and yes, he has only got one in the league. A lot of people will suggest because of his ban at the start of the season, he perhaps hasn't found the momentum, and because of the high standards that he set himself before. I think the fact that, you know, he's having those shots is good for the team, because if he weren't having them, it would be a problem. You know, the fact is he's getting in positions, okay, you know, the shots are going over, they're being saved, but at least he's getting there, and sooner or later that's going to turn. I just think, unfortunately, collectively, Madrid as a whole, whether it be through the injuries that they've had across the team, just a, you know, a poor standard of performance in sort of consecutive games. You know, as Ewan just said, you know, footballers are a funny breed, and, you know, they need confidence. We've seen it in other teams, you know, Valencia being the perfect example. Look at the difference between them last season to now. Once you get that confidence, that momentum going, you know, Real Madrid are going to come again. I agree with what Zidane has sort of said. It's a common theme throughout his press conferences. There is no crisis, you know, it's a blip. Maybe it becomes a bit more of a blip if they were to lose the Madrid derby and potentially go 11 points behind Barcelona in the league. But look, we're not there yet. They're labouring through games, which I think, you know, is the biggest issue at the moment. But I think once they sort of hit form again, you know, whoever's going to be on the end of it, they're going to get, you know, a whooping, basically.
Asensio hit the scoring form with that sweet strike against Las Palmas, and as I mentioned, was almost the goal that kind of knocked the stuffing out of them. Madrid still missing a few key figures in that side, and you particularly think of Marcelo and Dani Carvajal as being big elements that are lacking at the moment from Zidane's starting 11. And I guess a lot of people expecting when they come back, particularly Marcelo, who's been so good in the last 18 months or so, that's going to really change their forms around, because it adds that extra option going forward on the overlap, and just helps protect that defensive line a little bit more as well with their experience and solidarity.
Yeah, and I think also you look at, you know, Varane's been out again, so, you know, there's an issue there. And Bale, obviously no one's really talking about Bale. I actually wonder that when he does come back, is Zidane actually going to go with 4-3-3 and BBC again? Because, you know, if he comes in and makes the difference, I guess you can argue that, you know, that would be the correct decision. But I don't think it's a given that he's going to come straight back into the side.
You know, don't you have to fit him in somewhere, though? I mean, it's a guy you've played so much money for, and if he's fit, he's one of the best players on the planet.
Yeah, but then you can switch that around and argue, you know, then, you know, you play players that are at the top of their game and not ones that are misfiring. So you could argue that, therefore, you know, why Ronaldo and Benzema are playing. I think it's just a question, you know, you look at the transfer fees and all that sort of stuff. I mean, Bale certainly gives the team something. And because they haven't been playing fantastically well, you know, maybe he's got to come straight back in and see if he can spark them again. But you know, it's a difficult one for me, and I'm sure it'll be a difficult one for Zidane. You know, that midfield of Isco, Casemiro, Asensio and Cruz, you know, I think that's a fantastic midfield. You take one of them out to allow Bale to come in at the top, and it kind of upsets the apple cart a little.
Real Madrid then getting that 3-0 victory and going into the international break at least with some high hopes, and I suppose it's just a way to take the monkey off the back, if you will, for going into that break and having that delayed experience, and you hope that that front line and particularly the squad in general doesn't suffer any more injuries. You touched on there, Varane too, who's just been struggling for fitness of late, but all of their problems have meant that Barcelona have opened up a healthy lead atop the La Liga table over Los Blancos and over the majority of the rest of the pack aside from Valencia, and able to get a 2-1 victory this weekend against Sevilla. Which some thought was perhaps going to be a little bit more of a tough test than Barca have faced this season. Wasn't an easy one. An unlikely hero as well, in Paco Alcacer, stepping up with a brace to take Barcelona past him.
Yeah, it was a nice night for Alcacer, because he's really been given a start in La Liga. And whenever he has, he always seems to deliver. And he's not had the best first year at Barcelona. There's no denying that. But I think a lot of his struggles last year, some of them were circumstantial, not all of them were his fault, and once he got into a wee bit of a rhythm towards the end of last season, he was quietly effective. So it was quite nice to see Alcacer get a couple of goals in the score sheet, and what was interesting was he was sort of part of a front three which Barcelona haven't really played at all this season, given that now they don't have Neymar. So Valverde's maybe preferred to just have Messi and Suarez up top and pack the midfield, but in this game he decided to put three attackers on the pitch, and nobody's going to start comparing Alcacer to Neymar, but the way Barcelona started that match, the first 20 minutes where they were just attack after attack after attack, and then I think it was the 23rd minute Alcacer got his goal, albeit from a really poor mistake from Escudero. But yeah, Barcelona looked really really quite scary when they had three attackers on the pitch.
I wonder though, Ewan, do you not think it's a bit like with Andre Gomez? It's a bit of a shop window exercise from Valverde, in that he's obviously, you know, he needs to bring players into that position while Dembele's injured. Yeah. But, you know, he had Deulofeu that he could have brought on there. He could have mixed it up a bit. And, to me, it just seems very convenient. You know, you've got someone like Alcacer who's very hungry. I think I'm right in saying has scored every time he started for Barcelona. But he clearly doesn't fit in Valverde's long-term plans. And, you know, with only sort of 6-7 weeks to go until the transfer window opens again, I mean, it's kind of ideal for him, isn't it?
If it were any other manager or coach than Valverde, I'd probably completely agree with you, the cynic that I am. But I just feel like Valverde is the kind of manager who sort of focuses on his role and maybe leaves that kind of thing to the board. And some of the quotes he came out with in the summer when there was speculation about transfers, and obviously he's going to say the right thing, but he does give the impression of being someone who's genuinely focuses on coaching the team and not so much on the business side of running the club. So I don't know, I find it hard to believe that Valverde was maybe thinking about offloading players in the transfer window, but if it had been any other coach in the Liga, then I'd probably think the same thing.
Lionel Messi, as we mentioned, reaching the 600 mark in that game, and Ernesto Valverde has been cooing about him, has been cooing about Luis Suarez as well, still, that is still on his barren run at the moment. We're talking about, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo, and there's a lot more pressure being put on him than perhaps Luis Suarez, obviously because things are still going well at Barcelona. Is there any thought process that Barca do just need to make sure they start getting a little bit out of their Uruguayan striker at the moment? Because it is a slightly more fragile Barcelona squad than we've seen in previous years in terms of the depth. And while it's great to have people like Paco Alcacer picking up the slack at times, and you know it's always going to be frustrating for Lionel Messi when he doesn't get on the score sheet just because he loves to score goals more than anything else. But do you think they just need to start coaxing Suarez back into a bit of goal-scoring form at some point soon, or even be worried about it in any way, shape or form?
I think it's a bit of a double-edged sword as far as Suarez is concerned, because what we've seen is that he's obviously been shunted a little to the left-hand side, where, you know, last season obviously he was playing down the middle and he was, you know, scoring goals for fun. now where he's sort of just off centre and he's having to adapt his game to sort of mould himself around Messi being sort of the main attacker. It's not coming naturally to him. Having said that, when he gets in the position, and he has done a lot this season already, we saw it again against Sevilla, he's not, you know, he's not doing what Luis Suarez always does, and that's finding the net. Again, it comes down to confidence, and when you're bereft of it, the most simple chances are missed. So, you know, I think he's just, like Ronaldo, he's got to continue getting in the positions and hoping that sooner or later it will turn. Or Valverde's got to mix things up, perhaps drop Messi back in, slightly tucked in behind Suarez, and let Suarez play on the shoulders of the last defender centrally, and, you know, get the wide men coming down and feeding the balls into him, giving the chances to score.
Yeah, you almost don't want to put stuff on a plate and then watch him make a mistake and watch the confidence just go down even further. We spoke about Barcelona obviously coming into this game extremely happy with where they are on the table at the moment, but coming out of this international break, they've just got a little run of fixtures that aren't exactly easy for them, to put it kindly. Obviously, they've got Barcelona in the Champions League. There's a trip to the Mestalla coming up at the end of November against Valencia. One of the articles on marca.com/EN referencing the fact that obviously there's the Christmas El Clasico coming up as well. The Champions League group has been tough. They've got Villarreal away from home as well in early December. It just leads them into a real sticky patch of the season, perhaps, which some are expecting that might just tip the balance in perhaps Real Madrid's favour by the end of it.
Well, it may well do, but then when you've got a lead such as they have, obviously it's a small lead over Valencia, but already they're 8 points ahead of Real and Atleti, who at the start of the season would have been the two teams that you would have always again suggested would be up there. I think we can almost discount Atleti because I don't think they're playing anywhere near their potential at the moment. But, you know, they've given themselves that cushion. Yeah, that in itself, you know, can be difficult because then you become complacent. You're that far ahead. Again, we saw it when Zidane was first in charge. I think he was 10 or 12 points behind and he came to within a whisker of overhauling Barcelona. So, you know, look, Valverde's a sensible enough manager. You can't knock what he's done to this point. He's always come up with solutions to any problems that have sort of come up. So I think you just have to give him the benefit of the doubt. They are very tough fixtures, but, you know, again, they're perfectly capable of winning. They've only conceded 4 goals in the league this season, so they're nice and strong defensively. They're joint top scorers with Valencia going forward, so it's going to take a very strong team to beat them.
Jason Pettigrew just slamming down the chances of anybody else to upset Barcelona. Touched a nerve, perhaps, there, I think. Just an outstanding answer. Almost as confident as the way Barca play at the moment. Some saying that perhaps they didn't have as much control in the game against Sevilla as a 2-1 victory would suggest, although I think others would say that a 2-1 victory doesn't suggest that it was the easiest game at all. What about Sevilla going forward, then? Eduardo Berizzo could have made a big splash by upsetting the apple cart in the Camp Nou. It was always going to be a tough one for them. Their slide continues, obviously, and they need to find some answers before they get into December. And at least that way they can make changes in the January transfer window if they need to. But outlining where exactly all of their struggles are at the moment is a bit of a tough one because there's plenty across the pitch, really.
Yeah, on you go, Jason.
No, go on, you jump in, I'll come in a minute.
Sevilla's quite an interesting team because Berizzo, he's almost taken rotation to another level. I feel like he's read Zidane's handbook, but maybe only read the first page because every week he seems to change about 3 or 4 at least players, and I think they find it quite hard to build up any consistency. I mean, the game they played against Spartak Moscow on Wednesday night, that was probably Sevilla's best performance of the season, arguably their best result as well. I mean, you know, Spartak, the Russian champions, remember, this was and a team that beat them 5-1 over in Russia. So this was a very good result for Sevilla, and you almost felt that it would have made sense to just repeat that starting 11. I mean, there was one forced change with Gabriel Mercado being injured, but he made other changes as well. He took off Ben Yedder, he put on Muriel, and I feel like Sevilla just are never going to have a chance to build up any consistency because, like I said, every game there's about 3 or 4 changes from the one before that. So you have to think, is he maybe just saving the squad for the kind of business end of the season? We saw what happened last year with Sampaoli; they ran out of steam. So maybe he's just willing to sort of sacrifice a a lack of continuity just now, maybe give players a lot of rest just now so that they can be fresh for the business end of the season. Maybe that's what Sevilla fans are probably hoping. Whether that actually turns out, we'll have to wait and see. So it would just be nice, I think, if we could see Sevilla playing, working out who is their starting 11 and just playing them for a few games in a row to sort of see how good are they once they get to build up a little bit of chemistry.
Yeah, well, they've been leapfrogged by the Yellow Submarine as well this week now, as Sevilla move into sixth position on 19 points after their opening 11 games, and Villarreal now unbeaten in four. I mean, they can't take their foot off the gas too much and try and conserve energy for the latter part of the season. Otherwise, they'll slip away from the race for the top four at this point. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but it's something you've got to keep your eye on. You can't... Big teams get criticised for trying to turn it off and on and off and on again when they're trying to find form and believing that they can do that and being unable to. Sevilla doesn't have the same squad quality as the biggest sides around Europe, so there's almost a slight arrogance to the idea that they could... we'll take our foot off the gas for the moment, and then when we need to, we'll refine that form once again.
Well, they're just a different team away from home than they are at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. That was the sort of point I was going to make. I mean, the goal they scored against Barcelona was their first in four La Liga away games. They were tanked by Valencia. They were beaten by Athletic Club. They lost to Atletico Madrid. Yet, you know, all the games at home, they've won. So, you know, perhaps it just needs a change of focus when they go away from home, a different type of game plan. You know, keep it tight and compact instead of going all out for the victory, which is, you know, a hallmark of a Barreto side. It, you know, it is fantastic to watch, but if you're not getting the results, then surely you have to take a step back, be a bit more introspective, and, you know, maybe change things around a little bit.
Is he a kind of manager that does have that depth and that ability to change on the fly, have a new game style, create a new game style to be able to go, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure that he did it at Celta. I think, you know, it was sort of like... Celta's a different team to Sevilla. I think, I don't want to say he'd get away with it at Celta, that sounds quite rude, but there's more focus on his sort of tactical abilities or naivety at Sevilla. But, you know, clearly you can't go through a season, you know, being very dominant at home, and then as soon as you go away, you lose a game, or, you know, you don't even get a point out of it. He's going to slide down the table and end up, you know, comfortably mid-table, which isn't what, you know, Sevilla's fans or the board, I think, would have wanted, especially when they're paying out the likes of £20 million record fees on players like Muriel.
Perhaps, though, he's just got this master plan where he wants this Sevilla side to finish, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh this season and get back in the Europa League and win that, because maybe he knows that's the way to the Sevilla fans' hearts, is qualify for the Europa League. No more of this Champions League business. Let's just get us back in the Europa League.
It's not about being in the European elite. It's about winning the Europa League and getting that trophy and a bit more silverware again. I completely agree with you, Ewan. You know, don't get sucked into these group stage Champions League ties in the glitz and glamour areas around Europe.
No more embarrassing nights in Leicester. That's his goal.
No more. As well, it means that you don't get upset by a team like Karabag as well on home soil if you're not in the Champions League. And you were at that game, Atletico against Karabag last week, and Atletico just about finding a winner on the road against Deportivo through Thomas Partey this weekend in injury time in their 1-0 victory. I mean, Simeone said that the win against Celta Vigo a few weeks ago was what was going to launch this side on. It's not been the case in the last week. Scraping a win this weekend and a disappointing outing in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I'd only just woken up after falling asleep at that Carabao game, and then the first half of this one almost sent me back into slumber. This is what we've kind of come to expect from Atletico, and I think over the past few seasons a lot of people said Atletico were a boring team and maybe ultra defensive, and as much as they were focused on the defence, I don't think they were ever boring, but this season going forward, they just lack ideas. I mean, Griezmann is... we've talked about Ronaldo, we've talked about Suarez, and here's another superstar of La Liga, another poster boy of La Liga who's really struggling to get going, and he was quiet again, and even taken off in this one with 10 minutes to go, taken off for a centre-back in Jose Maria Jimenez. So I don't know if Simeone just genuinely thought that was the best idea, if he was looking for a draw, or if he was trying to make a statement. Either way, he did keep Thomas Partey on the pitch, and I think him and Gabby were Atletico's two best players, which is strange to say because I think last season central midfield was their biggest issue, and now it's maybe one of their strengths. And yeah, Thomas Partey with his second wonder goal in about 4 days, sparing their blushes, and another win up in Galicia as well. They just beat Celta Vigo, they beat Deportivo there, and with two wins there, that means they've now got as many wins up in Galicia as they do at the Wanda Metropolitano in six matches.
Yeah, you don't need to move grounds, just move
just move a wee bit northwest, and well, they've moved far away enough from the cauldron to get to this new ground. What's another who knows how many hundred miles?
Yeah, it's water for ducks' back, you think. Sorry, Jason, interrupted you there to make a ridiculously poor footballing joke.
No, I was just going to put something to Ewan, because I know you follow Atleti quite closely. Mm. Do you think if this sort of run continues, is it fair to say that Simeone might have taken them as far as he can, or is that being a bit too reactionary?
I think with this squad, that might be fair, but the fact they've got Diego Costa and Vitolo, but mostly Diego Costa coming in January, is it'll be. I think at the end of the season we can judge that, because Simeone he sort of made this fantastic squad, and then just at the time when they were almost peaking, when they won that Liga, when they got the Champions League final, that was when they took his centre forward away, and they never really replaced him. So Simeone has taken the rest of the squad probably as far as they can go, but he's never really had this squad that he's got. He's never had Griezmann and Costa in the same team. So I think once we see him have even just 6 months of having a world-class attacking midfielder, second striker, whatever you want to categorise Griezmann as, once we see him have a world-class player in Griezmann and a world-class finisher in Costa, I think once we see how he manages to make that work or not work, then it'll be interesting to judge how much further he can take this team. Because I think it has been a bit of a shame that Costa got taken away from him just at the moment when Atletico were at the peak of their powers.
Yeah. Talking about big games coming up with Barcelona, you've got just around the corner from the international break, Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid on that Saturday night, the late Saturday night game on the 18th of November. And with those two level pegging in the La Liga table at the moment, it's almost do or die for their seasons in terms of any chance of a La Liga title race. Whoever wins that is going to have by far the best opportunity. If Barcelona, of course, are victorious in that week against Leganes, and whoever loses is going to be over 10 points off the top.
Yeah, it's a really massive one, and it's interestingly, this is the exact same weekend as they played last year. They played the 19th November last year, just after international break, and Real Madrid again, they came into that one with a sort of patchy form. They'd conceded in 10 consecutive matches. They'd drawn with Legia Warsaw, and they went on to famously win 3-0 and absolutely demolish Atletico. So I think that's I could see this being a comfortable win for Real Madrid, because whenever they're under the most pressure, whenever they come into the, on paper, toughest matches, that's when they seem to turn it on. So and of course, that was at the Calderon with, the famous Atletico Calderon atmosphere. This is at the Wanda Metropolitano, which still doesn't quite feel like home. So I think if Atletico can get even a draw out of this one, it would probably have to go down as a positive result for them, given their form, which is right now even worse than Real Madrid's.
Yeah, I think a lot of the players have already suggested that it still doesn't, as you say, it doesn't feel like home. It almost feels like playing at a neutral ground. And although there's a lot more people in the stadium and they're closer to the pitch, the Calderon was the 12th man, wasn't it? And now it's almost like it's not become devoid of atmosphere at the Wanda Metropolitano, but it's not the same. And I think, obviously the game at the weekend was away, but, clearly there's something missing on the home game. So I kind of agree with you, and I think, Real Madrid coming into this one will fancy their chances.
Yeah, what's interesting about the Wanda Metropolitano is, obviously they've increased the capacity by about 14,000, and as much as there are plenty of Atletico fans in Madrid, a lot, maybe half of that, is extra Atletico fans, but a good chunk of that extra crowd is made up of tourists, which is a problem Atletico never really had. To get a ticket for the Calderon used to be now impossible, whereas now in the Wanda it's so easy to get a ticket. So I think a lot of tourists in the city are popping along to see Atletico Madrid, because they're now a big deal to see this new fantastic looking stadium, and that just almost it breaks up the pockets of atmosphere that you have in the stadium when you have groups of fans from outside the city who don't really have that much of a stake in the game. And I think that's a problem Barcelona and Real Madrid have at times had at home increasingly over the last decade, and maybe you fear that Atletico are going to have this issue to overcome as well.
Well, they might not have this issue if they can no longer compete in La Liga title races and struggle in the Champions League. I mean, if they continue results like the one against Carabag and performances like that as well, I don't think there'll be many queuing up at the Metropolitan.
Well, maybe they're aiming for another Europa League as well. I mean, they got a couple of... That's my theory on La Liga this season, is everybody wants back in the Europa League. And just wait till the end of the season when Valencia go on a 5-game losing run trying to get back in, and we have an all-Spanish race for that big chunk of metal next season.
The cup that used to be so glorious and prestigious when it was the UEFA Cup and just almost became like a family-friendly affair. With the Europa League, all the kind of intensity seemed to be sucked out of it with one branding move. But less said about UEFA and their marketing, the better, I imagine, on this podcast. You mentioned Valencia there then, Ewan, and let's touch on them because they keep on going. A 3-0 victory against Leganes. No one in and around the club is trying to get carried away. Neto, in particular, saying after the game, the goalkeeper, that they're not thinking about Barcelona or Real Madrid. They're comfortably ahead of Real Madrid at the moment. Maybe they could just look a little higher and look up at Barcelona. It's going to be difficult to not think about those two because they've put themselves right in the mix with this phenomenal start this season.
I think the big game is the one in a couple of weeks after the international break when Barcelona come to the Mestalla. I think if Valencia take that game, then I think then the pressure comes thick and fast, because then there will be belief. You know, Marcelino's done an incredible job. Let's not forget just how poor Valencia have been and the turnaround that he's got there. As much behind the scenes as on the pitch. I mean, behind the scenes was chaotic, wasn't it? And, you know, he came in, he put his marker down. He said, this is the way we're going to do it. Either you follow me or I'm not coming. He's got exactly what he wanted and he's delivered every single week. I mean, he's still unbeaten. As I said earlier, same amount of goals as Barcelona. Their play this season has been just an absolute joy to watch. Every player is firing. Zaza, I mean, come on. The man's been reborn this season. It's been incredible. And I think, you know, the only thing that's going to stop them staying up there is themselves. They've just got to keep on with this belief system. Even if, you know, they get a draw or even lose to Barcelona, they've got the players there. They're all playing at the top of their game. There is absolutely no reason why they can't be in the mix at the business end of the season. And I think, you know, Marcelino's exactly the right man to keep that going. They just need, you know, keep the consistency and the performance level high. And I think, you know, Champions League football as a bare minimum isn't out of their grip.
Wow, setting the bar high for Valencia this afternoon, Jason. Ewan, anything more to add about this side? Do they need to just make sure they keep their heads kind of, or feet on the ground rather than heads in the clouds? So, as I said, Neto kind of making the point that they're not thinking about competing with the top two in Spain just yet. Is that an important attitude to carry on for as long as possible? Because we've been talking about them since the start of the season with their great start. And it's only going to build up and build up and build up as it carries on.
Yeah, I think, you know, this attitude of take it one game at a time, as much as it's a little bit boring from us looking on from the outside, it's, I mean, we want them to say, oh no, we're going to go on and win the league by 10 points, because that'd be interesting to follow. But nobody's going to say that, so they've got the right attitude. I think what's going to be interesting for Valencia is, I mean, given, you know, Barcelona are obviously ahead of them in the table, there's a very good chance that they could beat them at the Mestalla. And I think what's going to be interesting from Valencia is, I'm already giving Barcelona the 3 points here, but if Barcelona do happen to win that game, how do Valencia respond? Because they've not lost a game yet this season. They've not had to really deal with any adversity. Even the draws they've had have been positives, really, drawn against Atletico and Real Madrid and in the derby against Levante. They've not had a bad result yet. So if they do happen to have a bad result against Barcelona, which is obviously possible, how do they respond to that? How do they come back to that adversity? And do they just allow that to be a blip and come back and kick up another winning run?
Plenty of things for this uh, for this Valencia side to learn. We are approaching the end of the show. We're running out of time, so just very quickly, a couple of other nods to mention after the La Liga results from the weekend. Villarreal with that 2-0 victory against Malaga, as I say, moving themselves just a little further up the table, leapfrogging Sevilla up into fifth spot, and Villarreal have suddenly come good in the last few weeks. Girona, a win against Levante, the two newly promoted sides battling it out in Girona's fine start to the season, continuing once again as they now sign themselves sat in 10th in the table. I don't think many Girona fans would have expected that. And Celta Vigo getting a 3-1 victory against Athletic Club Bilbao. Zeganda's side still struggling on the road once again. And Celta Vigo 3-0 up after just 25 minutes in that one. Bilbao just seem all at sea at the moment this season. Jason, a massive thanks to you for joining us on the show today, mate. We can find you on Twitter at Jason Pettigrove. That's at Jason Pettigrove. All one word, all lowercase. Much appreciate your time, mate.
Thanks, Ollie. Speak to you soon.
And of course, you can find Jason's musings on La Liga Marca in English, marca.com/EN. It's also where you can find Mr. Ewan McTair as well. We managed to go a show without even mentioning Ibar with you on, mate, but I really appreciate you taking the time to...
Best not this week. Yeah. Best not.
It's always better if we just kind of leave that in the background when they don't have perhaps the best weekend. But always appreciate the time, mate. Always appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You can find Ewan on Twitter at emcteer, at emcteer, E-M-C-T-E-A-R. All one word, all lower case. You can also get onto Twitter at Marca in English, at Marca in English, to be up to date with all of the latest breaking news. And of course, you can do that as well at www.marca.com/EN, www.marca.com/EN. In this modern day world, is there any point in saying www? Maybe, maybe not. I'm still going to keep doing it. Hashtag retro and all that sort of stuff that the millennials love. And of course, you can find us on iTunes and Audio Boom. Just search Eye on La Liga. Just search Eye on La Liga in iTunes. Like, review, rate the podcast, and get onto the marca.com/EN Facebook page as well. Just type in Marca in English on Facebook and you'll be able to find us there too. Really appreciate the time, gentlemen. We'll be back after the international break, looking back at some of the results. Of course, Spain already qualified for the World Cup. Nice, free and easy then this week, and I'm sure Jason and Ewan will be putting their feet up with a nice jug of sangria alongside them for the next few days. But when we come back to La Liga action, of course, we have that big Madrid derby on the horizon. Until then, until next week, enjoy all of the football that's coming our way, and we'll see you soon. Have a good one.